King Bogey is moving court.
Oh, shoot.
It's time.
What's going on?
Yes, it's time for him to leave the nest. And that is taking into account the fact he's been dead for more than 2 years. I'm actually sending him as a gift to someone.
you're sending a Gobi corpse.
Yeah, I barreled into this news without realizing quite how unhinged it sounds. But have you ever seen like old Warhammer art that's very, very, very sort of scratchy and deranged and has loads of pipes coming out of everyone? I know that's not narrowing it down because that's all old Warhammer art. But there's a very famous artist called John Blanche who basically did a lot of the imagery for it as I was growing up. I've ended up sort of knowing him and he's been a bit poorly recently. And so a mutual friend was getting together sort of little things to cheer him up. And knowing what I know about the guy, I thought more than anything else in the world, of anything I could give him, an embalmed fish carcass with a story to go with it would actually be an appropriate gift. So we'll see if that holds up.
Maybe that'll inspire him and we'll see some Warhammer art with, I don't know, a Chaos Space Marine or a suspiciously Gobi-shaped helmet and a load of pipes coming out of it.
That's the dream. I don't do anything without secret hope of self-advancement. And that's the world I want to see.
I guess it's also a counterpoint to the idea that you shouldn't meet your heroes. You should meet your heroes, and you should send them dead fish as a sign of friendship. Welcome, listener, to Season 2, Episode 42 of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock, Paper, Shotgun's PC gaming podcast, and the only podcast you need, in the opinion of a sadly absent Alice Bell. Still, the pod must continue, so today I'm your host, James Archer, and I'm joined by Nate Crowley. How are you, Nate?
I'm very well. I'm ready to send Alice any number of fish carcasses to help her feel better.
Is your garden just like all... It's just like a thin veneer of grass over stacks of fish boxes.
This is it, yeah. I'm gradually turning my entire house into a sentimental Gobi farm. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. I don't mean to just stick on this. Just out of curiosity, like, what's the lifespan of a Gobi?
That's a good question. It depends. Because they can deal with water temperatures that are quite extreme, they basically hitch their metabolism to it. So if you raise gobies in cold water, you could get 3 to 5 years out of them. But if you're raising them at 50 degrees centigrade, you know they're probably going to get through the whole life cycle in a year. And yeah, also as King Bogey taught me, they get quite fighty sometimes. So natural lifespan often reduce, doesn't come into it. But yeah, they're not Methuselahs by any count.
Yeah, that's probably why you've got so many dead ones. Speaking of, when I say sadly absent, Alice is fine. Like, she's just a bit ill. She is, as far as I know, still alive. Unlike the main topic of discussion for today, E3.
Good.
So, as was widely reported Tuesday night, the ESA, the Entertainment Software Association, announced that after 2 decades, its E3 conference has officially and permanently ended. This follows an attempt earlier this year in association with Comic-Con and EGX organizers ReadPop, who, full disclosure, also own RPS, at least for the time being, an attempt by them to bring back the once annual live show after previous disruptions caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. That attempt, of course, very famously failed, and now several months later, the ESA have decided to pull the plug entirely. That is it. There will be no more E3s. In a statement to the Washington Post, ESA President and CEO Stanley Pierre-Louis said, "We know it's difficult to say goodbye to such a beloved event, but it's the right thing to do given the new opportunities our industry has to reach fans and partners," adding that companies now have access to consumers and to business relations through a variety of means, including their own individual showcases. Now, Nate, immediate gut reaction. E3 is dead. How do you feel?
Nothing. I have very limited experience professionally with E3. I started writing for RPS in 2019. And in fact, I started in 1 month before E3, pretty much. So I got to cover it once. And then obviously everything went tits up the next year. And, you know, it was, well, I think pretty much actually from 2020, I don't think there was anyone who thought it would survive very long. So I didn't get my hopes up.
Okay.
And then before I'd sort of covered it professionally. I think the thing is, I've always been a really, I've always been very bad at getting excited about things that aren't out yet. So I was never the kind of person to pay too much attention.
E3 is not the event for you.
But I do understand, I know a lot of people had a lot more experiences with it than me. So I get, you know, I get the end of an institution thing, but I suppose I had no skin in the game, so it's just interesting.
Okay, yeah. I never covered it professionally at all. But there were times when I'd like have, I guess, watch parties with like my friends and just enjoy it as a punter.
Yeah, I can get that.
But then not even like, I don't know, maybe enjoy isn't the right word, because most of like the pleasure of watching that was like in the social aspect that we created by ourselves, not so much the, you know, the watching of trailers and the maybe like sometimes slightly overdone stage shows.
Oh no, I totally get you, because the appeal for me very much, I remember when I did cover it, it was, yeah, we're all up all night doing it on the... we had like on the work Slack, people were constantly roasting, you know, stuff that was going on, and it was, yeah, there was a lot of shared purpose there. So I imagine a watch party, yeah, I can totally get why that would be a laugh.
Yeah. But yeah, like, if we're honest, like all of the E3, like most of the E3 moments that live on in people's minds the most are just memes,
yeah.
or gaffes, like your giant enemy crabs and the caffeine guy who always hosted Ubisoft conferences, or Keanu Reeves. I think Keanu Reeves telling an audience member they're breathtaking. I think that was E3. But like, it's hard to recall there being specific moments from E3 that were good, like unironically.
Yeah, that's well put.
Yeah. I initially thought the Skyrim reveal back in 2010 was one, just in terms of like excitement. But I looked up, and that was actually the 2010 Spike Video Game Awards.
Interesting.
So it can't even have that. Games marketing events just melding together in my mind.
But that's quite a salient point, though, because it just shows. I mean, you know, but as we know, pretty much the reason this is happening is everyone does their own shows now, and they'll all obviously continue to happen. So really, is it not as if E3 is like some gelatinous alien creature that has burst to reveal several indistinguishable genetic siblings?
It maybe. I mean, that the so what I liked about E3 was like the sense of occasion.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of like, it was big, like, it was enough of a singular event that it stood out from, you know, just the background radiation of, you know, press releases or, like, the occasional new trailer that comes out, you know, throughout the year.
Mm.
But at the same time, it wasn't all, like, so hyper-compressed that like it felt rushed or that like games didn't necessarily get their due, which is we'll probably talk about the competing events in a moment, but yeah, stuff like the Game Awards or Summer Games Fest, they're basically just like 3-hour shows and they just crush so much stuff together that it doesn't really feel like a big event, or like definitely not as big an event as I think its organizers think it is.
It's the sensation's kind of like being strapped to a wall and having a huge cardboard tube full of brightly colored plastic objects with the word EPIC written on them. And then a sort of a low-powered gunpowder wad shoved in the back so it fires it all in your face.
Yeah, it's just not a nice experience.
No, it's just exhausting.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's like the difference between just a one-off gig and like a festival. E3 had like a bit of a festival atmosphere, like at its best. So I'll miss that. But yeah, it's so no particularly good or bad memories from E3, Nate.
Nothing. I would say has a lasting magic. No, yeah. Like you know, there's lots of. I think that Keanu Reeves moment probably was the high watermark, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was nice. That's just like a nice personable moment.
I think we can all agree that was the single delicious berry that the entire monstrous shrub was there to produce. But I think I'm good. I do have a question for you though.
Yeah, shoot.
So if we were to clear the whole of the ground of games marketing events like this, if everything was to fall to the wayside and inexplicably we had the power, like the creators of the Gregorian calendar, to make our own like annual events calendar for the games industry. And it had to serve no commercial purpose. I really like what you said about a sense of sense of occasion, right? What events would you build into your gaming calendar just for the right kind of hype?
I think I probably would have something like broadly similar to old E3 in terms of it being like a week or a couple of weeks where there's just like a series of big, like meaty showcases.
It'd be like the shape of very expensive games to come would be the theme, right? So it's your showcase. It's your big preview event, right?
Yeah. It's like one of those. Another one separately, like not at the same time, so they're not competing. One separately for, I guess, smaller stuff.
Yes.
I know there's like been improvement in that in terms of there are more like indie game shows, but they tend to be either like at the same time as the big shows or... This is a problem with the Game Awards, like demoted to like warm up.
Yes.
The warm up acts. And that's not fun.
They kind of think of it like a wrestling card, don't they? With all the lighter weight and mid card guys first before everything focuses on two enormous men.
Yeah. I actually think we could have like a better awards show as well, except it wouldn't be I don't think we should like copy something like the Oscars or the Emmys and just have it all in one night. I think it could be more of like kind of like a mini series almost, where you have like a few awards like each night for like 5 nights of a week. And if you want to do trailers as well, because that's, let's be honest, probably the only way people are really going to watch it, like you can have those, but it's not all just smushed into this, yeah, like 3-hour.
So, I've got a format for you there, okay?
Yeah.
So you do indeed do 5 nights of awards, but the awards ceremony takes the form of an abandoned pizzeria with Jeff Keighley as night watchman, and there are several like horrible like self-aware robots in the building, all of which want to reach, like, Jeff and scream the name of the game that's won the award in his face, frightening him very much. And so over the, it's a 5-day live stream of Jeff Keighley being haunted by these robots that want to tell him the awards, and you would call it the Game Awards. That could be good. What about like, yeah, you know, what if we take some of the drama behind real annual calendar events and infuse that into games? So Easter, for example, like celebrates the death and resurrection of Christ. You get to have a good roast meal. There's lots of imagery about eggs and rabbits. So I'm thinking there's inevitably a massive franchise which has lain dormant and gets rebooted every year. So, like, you could theme Easter around that. Like, a major publisher could book out, like, you call it, I don't know, like, Beaster or whatever, and it would be...
Beaster! Sponsored by Monster Energy.
Yes, yes. And on the Friday, they would destroy all, like, extant copies of the current, like, big game in the franchise in their warehouse. And then on the Sunday, the sequel or the reboot would be released and everyone would have a huge meal of roast lamb and there'd be choirs. And I think that would be a great way to...
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, that would be good. It's Beast of Sunday, Sundays. Actually, no, if you just always had that, because Halo even has monks singing and is like massively popular in the Bible Belt. So it's already kind of got the Christian connection. You could very easily like co-opt the entire Festival of Easter to be about a new Halo game, I think. But I don't suggest it.
What other holidays could we do?
Halloween.
I get games already do like, oh, it's Halloween. Like you always get like a horror game releasing at Halloween, don't you?
But this is it. If you then codify that, you know, again, make it one horror game gets to be the game on Halloween.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I think what I'm actually proposing is auctioning off time to companies. And I'm not sure I'm politically into that.
This is how we overcome the over-commercialization of games by selling time.
Just go full Ferengi level hyper-capitalist bullshit on it, yeah.
Going back to Jeff... Because if you ask Jeff, he will tell you that the Game Awards and the Summer Games Fest are both designed to do basically E3 but better. Like he put out a statement earlier this year when like ReadPop announced they were cancelling their E3 that said like, well I'm very sad for your loss, but you know the Game Awards, the Game Fest is designed to be like the future. But at the same time, like other than maybe being more like compressed, he's never fully elaborated on why they're better. But the fact remains, E3 is dead. Jeff events live on. Like, is that an adequate replacement? Because it doesn't feel like it.
My understanding of Jeff is really patchy because I thought he was like. Let's go for an ancient Roman analogy here. Like, I saw him sort of appearing at all of these events and being referred to a lot, and I thought he was like, you know, no, I can't go for a Roman analogy. I was just thinking about Rome too hard to actually talk about the truth. No, I kept seeing him thinking he was like a product of the machine, you know, that he was hired to do this. I didn't realize it was his own thing. So
no, he's like the engine of the machine.
Yeah, that's it. And he kept on running after the machine fell apart. You know, like an engine carrying on out of the bonnet of a clown car and taking on a life on the road of its own. So I don't really, like, I don't understand his skin in the game. Does he personally own the Game Awards and how does he afford that?
I mean, I don't know if he is the owner. He's definitely, like, the operator.
Mm.
He is the host. He does like most of the pre show marketing hype himself. I imagine like he's involved to some extent in like the choice of the games, partly because he very often like gets celebrities or like famous game developers up on stage, and you can tell he is just like dying to be friends with them.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. The guy seems legitimately really excited about what he does.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Like, I can't remember which site did it, but a game site did like a profile of Jeff Keighley once, and there were people he's worked with in the past said like he's a bit of an enigma, in that he does seem to be like genuinely passionate about games, but at the same time there's this like maybe more self-promotional side to him.
I would really like to play a game with him.
Which game?
Oh, no, now. I think...
It Takes Two.
What about Desperados 3, Take It in Turns, whenever one of us loses a life? The other one has
You want to play Life or Level with Jeff Keighley?
I really do, yeah. Because I think, and I would ask all the questions while it was his turn. Louis Theroux should come up with that as an interview technique, actually. It's very good. But yeah, I don't know. I think, the reason I say that is I'd want to watch how he actually interacts with a game.
Yeah.
Because I've only ever seen him being excited about the potential of a game existing in the future.
That's a very good point, actually.
What if that's where his passion is? When you sit him down in the game, he's like, yeah, it's all right.
It does bother me a bit that E3 was public, like the very public death of E3 came less than a week after maybe the worst game awards I've seen. Like,
oh yeah, I didn't watch it, but this was for my benefit. Was that the one? Was something about cutting things short?
Yeah, so because there are so many game trailers and so many awards, only like a few awards actually had the winners go up and make like an acceptance speech, and they had like I can't remember like either 30 seconds or a minute to do their speech, and if they were like beginning to overrun, there was like a massive screen like above the audience, so the cameras can't see it, but the people on stage can see it. And if it starts to get like a bit, if they're like approaching the end of their time, then the words like "please wrap it up" would appear on screen. And if they keep talking after that, then they just play like the music,
gruesome,
in place of the shepherd's hook emerging from the right and pulling them off. This was like, I don't know if this was like maybe in response to last year, in which Christopher Judge, who plays Kratos in God of War, did a very long speech, something like 7 minutes.
Wow.
I think they were just like at first laying in roll with it, and then eventually they were just like, we need to move on, let's play some music so he gets the message. And then this year it was just like way, like brutally enforced with the, you know, the screens and the like, the music that plays much sooner. It kind of like came to a head during the Baldur's Gate 3 Game of the Year acceptance speech, where I think the developers were paying tribute to someone who worked on the game and had recently passed away, and yet they were still playing like the stop talking music over that.
Oh,
so yeah, very very grim. So yeah, like, but even like besides the like genuinely nasty stuff like that, it was just like the announcements weren't that great. There were so many awards that they just like not skipped over them, but just like rapid fire announced the winners, which was just like Jeff doing a piece to camera, like not allowing like games like categories like best RPG, best sports game. Like you'd think these are big deals, and then they just like gloss over them as a group of five like simultaneous award announcements. So it's not a very good award show. It's not a particularly good game show. There was an Alan Wake 2 musical performance.
I can get behind that.
Which was genuinely excellent. But yeah, everything about it was just like,
well,
not good. Not good.
For the second time in as many podcasts I've been on, allow me to share a little bit of business warlock insight, because I've actually run a few award shows.
Really?
Yeah, some really horrific ones, actually, including ones for the debt collection industry, which is, that's an award show you'll never voluntarily choose to be involved in, but we all have to do things for money. And the problem with all of the award shows that I wasn't an event manager. I was a trade journalist who got involved in all of this. So it's definitely not where I come from. But what we found with every single award show was there was a massive pressure to increase the number of awards because, and I don't know how it would work, what the deals are with the Game Awards, but for us, every awards category had a sponsor, and the more awards categories there were, the more sponsors could be brought on board, and the more nominees could be convinced to buy tables to end up there on the night.
Yes, I also know what you're talking about, because when I watched on Computer Shopper magazine, we had the Computer Shopper Awards, and we had the exact same issue, like people not wanting to come unless they won the award.
Yeah, and so you end up with, and my goodness, the amount of judging panels I chaired and solely attempted to turn away from being a sell-off of awards categories. Like, you know, that's the thing. You know, award shows, and again, I'm not saying it will be 100% transferable model, but in my experience, award shows are under constant pressure to dilute the value of the awards they're giving. In order to make the show bigger and faster and contain more stuff that can be sponsored. Do you know how it works commercially with the Game Awards? What the sponsorship situation is there?
I mean, I don't think the actual awards are sponsored. It's not like you get the game of the year sponsored by EA. You don't get best strategy game sponsored by Paradox, or even like vested like outside interests, like, you know, energy drinks or game chair makers or stuff like that.
See, that surprises me, because it would seem, especially if it's no longer being run by publishers but being run by,
is it just like the Super Bowl halftime show, where it's just you have to pay so much money to put your trailer in the show that they just get all the money from that?
That would be my presumption, yeah. But then, you know, that kind of, okay, so I suppose the pressure acting on them there is the number of people willing to pay to put trailers in.
Yeah.
Which
does track, because there's a lot of bloody trailers, mate.
Yeah.
Oh, man, so many trailers.
Well, that's got to be it then. But then you have to wonder, because at the Game Awards, they're interspersing the trailers with the awards, right?
Yeah. Rather than vice versa, it is primarily a trailer show. I think someone counted up that during like the course of like the 3.5 hour show, about 38 minutes was spent on awards.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Well, that's your answer then. Yeah. Wow. That's a really interesting stat.
Oh, which is, it's a shame. I definitely think there is space in the industry for like a proper award show, because it is nice, even if like you don't care about winning like the shiny bauble per se, it is nice to just do recognition of good games after they come out.
100%. Yeah, and I think that's kind of the problem here, or this is the reason all these problems arise, is because every industry does want an award ceremony. It is a wonderful thing to have. It is the correct thing to do, like to recognize people's, you know, passion and sacrifice outside of mere, you know, sales figures. Like, it's a great idea, but the problem is, because it's a great idea, yeah, it inevitably happens in a way where commercial pressures are entirely pushing it in another direction. You know, whether it becomes a, you know, list of sponsoring companies, or it becomes bloated with trailers. I think, you know, the only truly great award show would have to be non-profit making, and who's going to do that?
Yeah. Certainly not Jeff.
Yeah, it's a bit sad. It's a bit sad. Yeah,
it is sad. I don't think we have the solution to it.
Write in with your suggestions.
on that slightly depressing note, should we talk about what we've been playing this week?
Yeah, let's do a bit of that.
I played, for the couple of days that it was available, the Tribes 3 Rivals Alpha playlist. Playtest, sorry.
Oh, okay. Tell me about that.
So this is not so much a sequel to Tribes 2 as it is to Tribes Ascend. It's being developed by Prophecy Games, which began as a subsidiary of Hi-Rez, who made Tribes Ascend. And it was a very nice surprise when it was announced, because I think a lot of most old Tribes players thought that the whole series was just dead. So I was super duper keen to get into the playtest and get my hands on it as soon as possible. And it kind of has a spine of another like really good Tribes game. It was really nice to once again be doing that. I think these days people call it Tiny Wings style hill sliding, where you go down a hill, you build up momentum, you slide up the next hill, so on and so forth, until you're going really, really fast. That's in there, and that always feels really good when you pull it off. And I think the finished game could be like really good as well, but it could definitely do some changes. So one is team sizes. So by default, a capture the flag game in Tribes 3 Rivals is 5v5, which is 1/3 the size of a standard game of Tribes Ascend, despite the maps being like of comparable size.
What is Tribes Ascend? I've not come across it.
Tribes Ascend. It was it came out in 2012. It's like a comp first person shooter where people don't run around, they like slide they slide around with like jetpacks, and you can basically turn off your ability to feel friction. So as long as you have momentum.
Yes. Okay.
You just slide around and shoot explosive frisbees at each other. While capping flags. Which is my favorite part. So yeah, it's like much smaller teams than Tribes Ascend, despite the maps being like very still like quite big. So it feels a bit too quiet at the moment, and maybe a bit too stretched out. I love being like the team's flag capper in Tribes, like being the super fast, skinny little dude who doesn't do any damage and dies very easily, but can zip around at 200 kilometers an hour.
Always a trait.
For the sole purpose of stealing bits of fabric on sticks. But in a 5v5, I very often feel like I'm being dragged off to do like base defense or play in the midfield, just because there aren't enough teammates to adequately cover everything. So you do have to, call off the attack sometimes to go fill in elsewhere, which just doesn't. Yeah, I think it's better when you have a big team with a lot of moving parts and a lot of people doing like different roles, which is hard to do in like such a small squads. The second thing is it's just a bit slower than Tribes Ascend. Like your own physical movement is slower. It feels much harder to pick up like really, really high speeds by skiing down mountains, and it's harder to get up there in the first place because your jetpack uses much more energy than it did in Ascend. So everyone is just kind of like spluttering around a bit. When Tribes is all about, like, unless you're a 100% defensive class, it's all about going fast. Like, you have to keep your speeds up or you will lose. It is the self-proclaimed world's fastest FPS.
No.
So yeah, more speed, please. All that said, like, I'm not overly worried, because it is still very early days. Like, that was an alpha. The playtest was for the actual purpose of, getting feedback. And Prophecy Games do seem open to making changes. They're very keen on like encouraging people to join the Discord and give feedback and talk amongst themselves and whatever. And I think the changes I'd like to see would be quite easy to implement as well. They already have like 12v12s in the playtest. They were just in a air quotes custom lobby mode rather than it being the main one that you queue for when you boot up the game. So yeah, just bigger teams, buff jetpacks, and I think those would just go miles towards making Tribes 3 feel better and more exciting.
It's funny, actually, as you've been saying that, I've been realizing for the first time that my enjoyment of a multiplayer game is almost always directly inversely proportional to the team size, because the smaller the team, the more chance my level of skill will matter.
That's a good point.
Like, I'm thinking of the multiplayer games I've absolutely loved. And I think it probably peaked for me with the original Star Wars Battlefront, which was just cracking, because it was like 32 a side? Something like that. And you could just grab an X-Wing and make a mistake. Yeah, that was... I've just realized now I really, really like very big teams and things.
Well, normally I'm kind of the opposite, because I like to feel like my contributions are making an impact and that we're, you know, like materially contributed to winning. But yeah, at the same time, it is a balance, because if it's just small all the time and like... It feels like it's trying to be an intimate game, but just on a massive map, which doesn't... I don't think it works. Unless you're like maybe playing like super high-end competitive with like a full team of five versus a full team of five, and everyone's on mic, and everyone's taking it very seriously, and everyone's communicating. Like, that might be... You know, that might be, you know, a way people enjoy it, in the same way that people enjoy like playing Highlander mode in Team Fortress 2. Which I've done and is fun, but I also like playing, you know, modded 16 versus 16 servers in Team Fortress 2 where it's just pure chaos. I think 12v12 would be is a good size for this kind of game.
So when's it going to be out?
I don't think there's a release date. It was just announced earlier this month, I believe, or maybe like late November. And they've just done like the alpha play test, so it's going to be minimum like a few months. They may or may not do early access. I can't remember if they said they would, but it's gonna be a while. So I think there's like reason to be optimistic, even if I have spent most of this session complaining about it.
That's our job.
Yeah. What have you been playing, Nate?
A few things. Yeah, I went back to Darkest Dungeon 2. Because I saw that. Like, it really hadn't grabbed me when it came out. There's quite a lot's changed about it now. There's DLC. Unfortunately, the problem before, you know, as arguably to some extent with Darkest Dungeon 1, comes when you get into the mid-game grind. So I'm very much enjoying the early game again, but we'll see how it goes. I love Darkest Dungeon 1 a lot, and... was kind of shocked the sequel didn't grab me in the same way, so I'm happy to.
I remember you saying,
chance. Yeah. What else? Rogue Trader is out now, of course. So, funnily enough, was that in Nottingham at the weekend? The sort of Black Library authors had a get together, and Rogue Trader was being spoken of highly, and no one in the room had actually written dialogue for it, I think. So it was an unbiased opinion. Yeah, I've installed that now, and actually that's probably going to be my little treat for today once we're done with recording.
Nice. It's a big old treat, as I understand it. I've not played it, but it's a...
Well, it'll be interesting.
Big old game.
Because, like, I respect Owlcat's approach. I put a fair amount of time into their last Pathfinder one, whose title escapes me. It's the one where you're, like, leader of the Devil Army. Very good. And it was interesting because eventually it was just too much for me. Just like too much detail. And I thought the storytelling was excellent. Like, it was very engaging. They were very creative with like bolting big systems onto it. But I think it will be interesting to see that approach in a setting that I'm legitimately obsessed with. Because I think it might actually make it an even better experience for me. So I'm quietly really hopeful about it. But next week I will let you know how the egg has cracked and slid down my throat.
horrible lovely image. Please do. I haven't played it. I did read a good piece by our news editor Edwin about Rogue Trader, about how picking like the neutral dialogue option is actually like relatively interesting in this game, because everyone you meet is like a screaming lunatic for yeah. for one side or the other. So doing what is normally like the safe option and trying to hedge your bets a bit can actually be like potentially dangerous, because you know you might accidentally commit heresy.
Yeah, it's not a universe where you want to be moderate about anything.
Yeah.
Like go into every situation turned up to 11 and you'll be right. Yeah. No, I liked Edwin's doing a review in process, isn't he? In progress, even, which I think is a really good idea for a game that big. And I actually read this piece before I decided to press buy. So rock paper shotgun for all your PC gaming needs.
Rockpapershotgun.com. Also on Rock Paper Shotgun, you can find hardware coverage.
Oh, look at this devil.
And soon, probably next week, I'll have my Lenovo Legion Go review up, finally. I said last week I'd give my Legion Go opinion now, and then ideally we'd never talk about it again, because I feel like every third hardware section I do on this podcast is about the Lenovo Legion Go.
It's okay. It can become like the fourth Beatle.
So I'm here to tell you that it is pretty good. It's definitely a cool idea with the detachable Nintendo Switch style controllers, one of which has a mouse built into it. That's very cool and actually works quite well. But I don't think I'd buy one, because as unique and interesting as the mouse controller is, and like as big and sharp as a display is, it still has the same problem as the Asus ROG Ally, in that Windows 11 just feels horrible on a little handheld that you mostly control with thumbsticks. So the Legion Go does have a touchpad, which the ROG Ally doesn't have. But even with that, it's too fiddly to navigate, and you get other Windows PC bullshit, like games not launching in the right window size. And yeah, like the Steam Deck has compatibility issues, but far more often it just works. You know, like you launch what you want to launch and it launches with the right aspect ratio and all the controls are functional, and that's not always a given. Not just on this, on the Asus one as well, but just on Windows handhelds, yeah. It doesn't feel like hardware makers have really like wrangled it to be a good handheld OS yet.
Speaking of wrangling, could you tell it to me through beans?
nice seg.
Thank you. Thanks.
Nice seg. So I guess it's like if a cowboy is making a bean dish and he's using like a lot of high quality ingredients, he's got really good beans, fresh tomatoes. So he has all the good ingredients,
yeah,
and very good hardware. Like he has a very high end wooden spoon.
Yes, really high quality and, fire.
And his campfire is immaculate. Like it's a perfect little pyramid.
Nice.
Of dry wood. And yet what comes out just like it comes out of like a load of beans stuck together, so it's just a bit difficult to eat. And like some like the flavor of the sauce is nice, but it's like thicker in some places and thinner in others, and it's just
technical problems.
Despite I want to stress like the hardware is good. It's way more reliable than it was when I tested it earlier in the year. The build quality is better. It feels really solid. The screen is really nice. I thought it was a bit mad, maybe putting a quad HD screen on a handheld, but it does.
You've come around to that.
Yeah. It's not good for the battery, if I'm honest. But when you find a game that actually looks that can actually run well at that resolution on the hardware, like it is nice.
High resolution on tiny little screens can actually be a lot of fun, can't it?
Yeah, like I want to be like really hard nosed about it and be like, oh, you don't need this, and you probably don't, but it does look nice.
It's pleasant. It's pleasant.
It feels like more expensive than it is. Like, it's not cheap, but it feels like, yeah, you can't get a Quad HD gaming laptop for 700 quid.
That is good for price. Yeah, when you put it like that.
A lot of the like UI problems, I should say, are fixed or lessened if you use the mouse. But then a lot of the time, even if there is a suitable flat surface available, which if you're using it as a portable device, there often isn't. Sometimes you just want to use the handheld as a handheld and not have to bother with like disassembling it, like taking the controller off, extending the kickstand, setting it down, inserting. You have to use the controller as a mouse. You have to insert it into this little ring attachment, which is like completely loose otherwise, and I imagine is quite easy to misplace. Put it into that, switch it into like FPS mode, they call it, and then only then can you do like the little like UI button clicking that you initially wanted to do. And sometimes, especially with a handheld, like you just want to pick it up, turn it on, and have it work.
Yeah, it's something that's meant to make your life more convenient, right?
Yeah, like it is. You know, it is. You can see the appeal of consoles over PCs. In handhelds, in terms of like just getting something that you don't have to fiddle, with it. You just turn it on and play something, and it's like guaranteed to work.
Game straight from the tap.
Yep. So yeah, hardware's fine. OS maybe isn't worth it. Unless you just use Steam in big picture mode and nothing else. But then if that's the case, then why not just get a Steam Deck for like half the price?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about what my new computer is going to be. What was the name of that little devil that you mentioned before?
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head. I'd have to go back to the old episode notes. But yeah, it was the mini PC.
Yeah, I'm still thinking hard about a little devil. That'd be pretty
good. I definitely want to get some in like in the new year. Maybe do like a group test or something. And see if there's any good. Actually, also in hardware news, Intel are just today announcing a new series of laptop chips, which have like way better integrated graphics in it. Ooh. So it'll be interesting as well to see if those kind of make it into like mini PCs.
New about these chips? What's
so the integrated graphics are sort of kind of based on Intel's Arc like desktop graphics.
Okay.
I don't know like the particulars of how they're better, but the benchmarks, and again these are like official benchmarks, so taken with a lot of salt, the official benchmarks they've given us are that it is like much, much more powerful than the integrated graphics they've had on previous Intel chips, like, and it should potentially, it could potentially be like more powerful than the chip that's in like the, you know, the Legion Go or this mini PC.
Oh wow, okay.
Which was, oh no, I thought it was in the episode notes for last week, but it apparently is not. Oh dear, that's embarrassing. Oh no, sorry, it is the sorry, Phoenix Edge Z1. There you go.
Phoenix Edge Z1.
Write that down.
write that down in your copybooks now. Excellent.
So yeah, it is an interesting time in general for like low power, like small graphics.
Why do you think that is? Do you think there's any?
I honestly think like the success of the Steam Deck might have had a part in it, because it shows that people are, you know, people don't just want to be like aiming for ultra 4K all the time. Like, people can be happy with playing it like 1080p or lower on low settings if the form factor works for it. And yeah, like I don't know this for a fact, but it would not surprise me at all if people at Intel looked at what AMD is doing with these, you know, these handheld chips and thought, well, either let's get a piece of that, or well, we need to up our game on our like integrated graphics, because yeah, there has been like a big jump in the last couple of years in terms of like performance.
Yeah, think about all the time we spent talking about little machines. It seems, well, it's a good time to be a small machine.
Yes, indeed. Okay, I think that's it for hardware this week. So, Nate, do you have a little two player mini game for us?
Yeah, do you want to do a little bit of sweeten the deal for old time's sake? I don't think we've pulled this one out.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've last sweetened a deal for me.
Okay, so in theme with what we were talking about earlier, this deal is you are you're going to be sent away to an alien civilization who have been watching the Game Awards obsessively for years. And they want a Jeff Keighley of their own. So you will be transformed into a facsimile of Jeff Keighley.
Oh no.
To present the Game Awards every night for the next century.
Oh no.
In an alien, the heart of an alien empire, okay?
Like Ben Stiller in Tropic Thunder.
Yes. So, after the century's up, you get to go back to Earth.
Okay.
Right? So how much would I have to pay you to do this?
Big fucking money, Nate.
£1 billion. Okay, it's not century. Okay, I'm starting to sweeten my own deal already. Okay, I've started off with too harsh premise. Okay, it's for 1 year. The Game Awards every night for a year.
Every night for a year. Okay. A million.
One million
of the king's pounds.
Okay, to do the game nights every year. Okay, yeah, every night for a year.
Every night for a year.
£1 million. All right. So, let's knock 400 grand off that, and you'll get turned back into James afterwards.
Oh, was I not being turned into... Was I not being turned back into me afterwards? Oh, so you're
going to... That wasn't in the contract.
You're going to permanently turn me into Jeff Keighley.
Well, yeah, oh, unless you want to make the small payment of £400,000.
Well, I mean, that's... I'm basically just getting like 600,000 for what I initially thought would be a one mil
yeah,
job. So
I'm afraid to say that's correct.
I think you have to sweeten that a bit.
Okay, 200,000.
Okay, so 800,000 is my pre-tax.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's still like a significant upgrade on my current annual income. So
yeah, and it's going to cost way more than £200,000 to, you know, un-Jeff yourself. So this is a saving in a way.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take that.
All right, good. You, for another £100,000 off, you get to hang out with someone back on Earth via like a teleportation scheme for 1 hour before the start of each Game Awards.
Oh, so 1 hour every day?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not...
I think that sounds pretty good.
That would significantly improve my mental state, I think.
Yeah, I think I would say it'd be vital.
Literally come back down to Earth.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll take that.
Lovely. 700 grand now you've been paid. All right, 600 grand. But every game you announce is literally incredible. Like, it's every successive game you announce is better than the one before and seems more perfectly suited to your interests.
Oh, Matt. But...
So you'd be really... You wouldn't have to fake the passion.
Yeah, but are these, like... If I'm just doing this for the benefit of some strange aliens and I'm not even the real Jeff Keighley...
No.
Like, are these real games?
Totally real games being made by the aliens.
Will I be able to play them back on Earth?
For another 100 grand, yeah.
I don't think any game is worth essentially losing 200 grand.
But look at what you'd be doing, James. You'd be flooding Earth's culture with fantastic video games made by these like ultra principled game obsessed alien beasts.
Oh, I do like improving society.
But then what about all the developers put out of work, James? What about the protests, the horrific bigoted protests against the aliens by formerly sweethearted game developers? The war, James! The games wars!
I feel like you're making points that I should be making, but I'm just blinded by the prospect of Titanfall 3.
In the first instance in Sweeten the Deal history, I'll be begging you not to take the deal.
I guess if we're thinking of it in like a Freakonomics way. The opportunity cost of me like benefiting from all these like amazing games coming out is that the much less money is produced through the Earth based games industry.
Yes.
So yeah, the negative externalities I think outweigh the positive ones in this case, so I don't think I can accept those terms.
Do you know that's a convincing win, James? I'll give you that. I've run out of time as well to sweeten the deal much further.
Oh, wow. This...
So the aliens are going to have to walk away from this one.
Yeah, they'll just have to watch regular-ass Jeff Keighley in his big shoes.
Oh, but now I'm thinking, what if the aliens are good? What if they deserve the game's money? Oh... Do you know what? Let us absolutely slam the lid on this Pandora's box before it opens any further.
If these guys are so amazing at making games, there's nothing stopping them from just making the games and then paying Jeff Keighley to advertise them during Summer Game Fest.
No, you don't understand. Like, that's the fulcrum of their religion. Like, there's no point making the games if Jeff doesn't then hype them. Like, you would be the act of transubstantiation through which... games become wine to them. You know?
I think we could just save everyone a lot of effort and just ship off the real Jeff Keighley. He'd love to be in a society where he is treated as a god.
Yes.
Oh, he'd be like, finally. He could clone his own Hideo Kojima to be best mates with.
No, it'd be called Hideous Kojima, and it'd be like a giant octopus man. And it'd be his best mate in the aliens, and it'd be very good. Well, glad I'm not being paid to write that story.
Yeah. Glad I'm not being paid to go and impersonate Jeff Keighley for a year.
In space.
Should we do some recommendations, mate?
That's a lovely idea.
Yeah, so every episode we recommend some things which are not PC games. I'm specifying PC games because I would kind of like to recommend a board game. I think that's within the rules. Is that okay?
Well, I was going to recommend one as well, so we're damned together.
Oh, shoot. Okay, you go first.
It's the Deep Rock Galactic board game.
No! Yeah. No, I was going to recommend the Deep Rock Galactic.
My boy, seriously.
Oh, wow, no way. Well, oh, amazing.
Everyone better fucking play it then. Yeah.
I played it for the first time at the weekend.
Me too. Wait.
No way.
Were we playing against each other? It's great, isn't it?
It is. It's really good fun. So I'm not a board game person. So apologies to anyone listening who is, because I'm probably going to talk about it in what seems like babyish terms. as if I've just discovered cards and dice. But yeah, like it, a big part of why I like it, despite being, I was initially overwhelmed by all the cards and the rules and the tokens and the board design. A big part of why I like it is because it's fully cooperative.
Yes.
So as long as one person knows what they're doing, they have no reason to fuck you over.
Yeah.
And you can still, like, you can still enjoy it. And the only, like, potential negative outcomes come from, like, the, you know, the regular rolling of the dice.
It's really good for playing with people who really know it as well. Because of that cooperative aspect, because they can just fill you in on all the useful little tricks and stuff, and there's not that awkward thing where someone's trying to teach you a game and also play you at it.
Yeah. I mean that's exactly what I had. But even then, like, it's still like fairly quick to pick up, I think. Like, we only had time for two games, but by the end of the second game, like, I was definitely able to, like, suggest things and do things that my more experienced friend, like, hadn't thought of. So yeah, like, it looks overwhelming at first, but it is actually quite easy to learn quickly.
Oh, and it's really good as well, because it's all, like, it's very well adapted from the PC game, so you don't need a lot of things explained to you, you know?
If you played the game, yeah.
Oh, yeah, if you haven't, definitely do. But yeah, did you... I don't know how deluxe the version you were playing was. The one I was playing had been a Kickstarter reward tier where it had loads and loads of, like, actually quite good miniatures and little bits.
That's what I played as well.
Yeah. It's great stuff. And we finished, I think, in about 45 minutes, which, considering my big problem, I do quite like board games. I've certainly played a lot of them in my time, but my ADHD and the complexity of the games I like don't tend to go together very well, and I get very bored. But this, we absolutely shot through it, and I think if we'd had a bit more time, we'd considered the campaign as well.
Yeah, there's I got the impression there are, like, different difficulties of missions you can take, and we just did, like, the first two easiest ones.
Mm.
And yeah, we did, like, the first one in about maybe, like, an hour and a half, but then they had to explain everything to my stupid ass. And then the second game was more like, an hour. So
yeah, it's good stuff. Deep Rock Galactic, Darkness, Danger, Dwarves.
And the game is also very good as well. Yeah. But that's breaking the rules of the recommendation section. Oh, wow. Has there ever been a dual recommendation?
No, that is a first. That is a first. So I'm afraid it's now law that everyone has to buy that board game.
we're just so in tune, Nate.
That's it. Powerful.
Right, so I believe that just wraps up episode 42 of season 2 of the Electronic Wireless Show podcast. You can find us on rockpapershotgun.com. We're also on basically all the social medias these days, including TikTok and Blue Sky. Just search Rock Paper Shotgun. We also have a Discord, a very lovely Discord for chatting with fellow listeners about the podcast, the site, and games in general. A link to that will be in the show notes. I believe we'll be back next week for the final episode of the year.
Oh my god, yeah.
The magical Christmas episode.
The big one.
Yeah, the big one. Hopefully with all three of us. So hopefully we'll also see you then, beloved listener. And it is goodbye from me, and goodbye from Nate.
Bye.
Bye.